A weird mystery object has washed ashore in Australia, and our webmaster tonight, Sean Latisore, has posted that story in the carousel up at the coasttocoastam.com website, so you want to check that out. All right, when we come back, we're opening up the phone lines, questions and comments for Charlie Robinson, author of The Octopus of Global Control, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm Richard Serrett, coming to you live from Coast's Toronto affiliate In-Depth Radio News Talk 1010. Charlie Robinson is with us, the author of The Octopus of Global Control, kind of a unique way of sort of looking at a lot of the conspiracies and theories revolving around secret societies and the deep state and so forth. It's really largely told through the people that, well, that are in positions of power and make very telling quotes. Some might even call some of them confessions. But some of the quotes are not from the movers and shakers, the David Rockefellers or the president. President Woodrow Wilson is featured in the book, but from comedians. And Bill Hicks, the late great Bill Hicks, is his quotes are in the book. Some of them are rather profanity laced. Can you share a favorite Bill Hicks moment from the book with us?
Let me find one here. Hang on one second.
And just for the record, I should say that I don't believe that Bill Hicks turned into Alex Jones. You know, there are a lot of people actually who believe that. There is a resemblance, but poor Bill is dead, I'm afraid.
That would be an awesome conspiracy right there.
You'd be surprised how many people subscribe to it.
So,
I don't want to put you on the spot, but...
No, no. Okay. Well, here's one that I've always liked. I ascribe to Mark Twain's theory that the last person who should be president is the one who wants it the most. The one who should be picked is the one who should be dragged kicking and screaming into the White House.
So that's Bill Hicks actually sort of quoting Mark Twain. And Mark Twain also right. is featured in the book. The other comedian that, and we played a clip of George Carlin. It was during a radio interview. He was talking about conspiracies. But towards the end of his life, particularly, I think, after his beloved wife passed away, I thought George sort of turned into a bit of a nihilist. And for me personally, I mean, I was a fan of George Carlin, but I just found his later work to be... beyond cynical and kind of almost hateful, a little, I have to say, towards humanity. We were talking about, you know, how some perceive humanity as a cancer, and I think towards the end, George sort of felt that way. But at the same time, he did say some pretty dangerous things out there on the comedy stage. Do you have a favorite?
Oh, yeah. Here's a good one. It says, think about how stupid the average person is, and then realize that half of them are stupider than that. Carlin is the best.
Right, right. It almost reminds me of a Winston Churchill quote. Not sure if it's in the book, but he was talking about all you have to do to understand what's wrong with democracy is spend 5 minutes talking to the average voter.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of along the same lines. All right, let's go to the phones, and let's say hi to Joe in Long Island, New York. Good morning, Joe. Welcome to Coast to Coast AM.
Hi, great topic, Charles. I think a key tactic sometimes of these people is omission. You know, like, for example, if there's something that costs $10 that's going to cure cancer, they're not going to tell you that.
Right.
You know, they're going to have you take the expensive drugs. You know, or the politicians are not going to tell you certain things about their real agenda. They're going to give you a spin story. One of my questions would be about just how does a U.S. corporation like Monsanto bully the small farmer in India? And also on the nuclear reactors, I think they use that global warming argument this doesn't have carbon emissions, but at the same time, if any one of those goes down, the area within 50 miles is uninhabitable for centuries, you know, so that doesn't get publicized.
And they're typically the same exact reactor as well, so the... So the reactors that they were building in the 70s are all almost identical, and they're the same type that was in Fukushima, with a ridiculous design flaw that nobody questioned about putting all the spent rods up in a pool on the roof. I mean, it's insane that the blueprints for those got made at all, but it seems like every single country has multiple nuclear reactors that are just not going to last in the long term.
It's probably a time, we're probably due for an update on Fukushima. I haven't heard much lately how that's going over there. Thanks for the call, Joe. Randy is in Richmond, Virginia. Randy, good morning. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hi, Richard.
Hi there.
The name of your guest is Charlie Robinson, right?
Correct.
Yes. My thing is, I always keep thinking, everybody talks about the New World Order, that's what's coming. But my way of thinking is actually return to the Old World Order. Because before America was the birth of America, freedom took about 5,000 years to manifest itself. You know, you figure about the Magna Carta and all these other things. Then finally we get the Constitution and America's born. But then the Founding Fathers, they did something which was just contrary to everything else. They actually were the elite of their days. They were the landowners. And here they're giving the power to the people, the commoners. That never happened before. That totally turned everything upside down. So those who are in power now, looking at that as something which is totally contrary, they want to return us back to the way it was before, where the ruling elite were those who were ruling over the commoners. That's why I look at it.
That's an excellent point, Randy. That's an excellent point. I mean, we tend to look at, or some do, I certainly don't, look at, you know, the United States as being on the vanguard of pushing for this new world order. I think it's the other way around. I think the United States is seen as the obstacle to a new world order, and that's why certain individuals or groups who have no allegiance to the United States, I wouldn't even call them Americans, they may reside there, I don't know, but the enemy is the United States, and yep. Democracy is the enemy. So rather than looking at the United States sort of as the personification of the New World Order, it's the enemy of the New World Order.
Right. So if you look at things, the things that are happening, and you're trying to figure out, why are they doing this? If they're trying to do the right thing, why are they doing all these other things? Well, you're making an assumption that the people in control are trying to do the right thing. A lot of times they set these things up to cripple a country. So when we make that assumption that they're somehow on our side looking out for us, that's a dangerous one.
All right, Randy, thank you for that. The other thing is, you know, all countries have episodes in their history that are troubling, problematic, odious even. I think the difference, though, is when you look at Western democracies in particular, is the extent that they go to remediate those problems, that there is often a purging of the national consciousness and of the soul. Apologies to certain groups and so forth, or payments out to certain groups. You don't see that in other places in the world. I think that's one of the great aspects of countries like the United States and Canada and other Western democracies, is the willingness to try and redress past wrongs.
Right. Well, these days, the media doesn't address any wrongs. They just, you know, omit it. Here, one second.
Did we lose you, Charlie? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I need to take a drink really. Hang on.
Yeah, 3 hours is a long haul
to
go. Drink deep from that glass, yes.
Here's one more thing about David Rockefeller. I want to get this in. It says, we're grateful, he had a quote, we're grateful to the Washington Post, New York Times, Time Magazine, and other great publications whose directors have attended our meetings and respected their promise of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subjected to the lights of publicity during these years. But the world is now much more sophisticated and prepared to march toward a world government. The supranational sovereignty of a determined, of an intellectual elite and world bankers is surely preferable to the nation of auto-determined.
So this is David Rockefeller thanking the mainstream media for helping to further his goals of one world government.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you guys for being quiet and not talking. If God didn't talk about it, we'd never be able to get people to want to join a one world government. So it just goes to show how deeply corrupted the media has become.
All right, let's go to the wild card line, and is it Ananias in Fort Myers, Florida? Am I pronouncing that name correctly? Is it Ananias?
No, good morning. You butchered it quite well, thank you very much.
All right, why don't you give me the correct pronunciation?
It's Ananias.
Ananias, my apologies. All right, thank you. Welcome, okay. Ananias.
Good morning. I want to take the conversation all the way back to the beginning of this interview, where you and the gentleman were talking about the truth, the puzzle, and I want to say three things. One, the truth of history is in well-written books. It's all available for our reading. The last 100 years, not so much, but if you know enough knowledge about what happened, you can find the truth. The second thing is has to do with law and how we got to here where we are now. In 1810, the United States Congress proposed a constitutional amendment to the states that was ratified in 1819, called the Titles of Nobility Act, that canceled citizenship for any citizen who accepted a foreign title or honor. We call those honors Esquire now, and it's never been unratified. It's also never been widely published. It took 60 years during the 1800s to wipe out that history and not teach it and forget about it. It's in the old law books. It's concrete effect is to remove citizenship from anyone who is a lawyer who accepts a foreign title such as Esquire. And what that means to legislation is that all their votes, all the votes of Esquires, are invalid, which means there are no laws, because every congressional session and every legislature that has had a lawyer holding office has been invalid. There is no law older than 1819. And the third thing is we got to remember that Christ won on the cross at the beginning, in 2,000 years ago.
Ananias, what was that law called again regarding Esquires?
Title of Nobilities Act.
Title of Nobilities Act. Of what year?
1810 was proposed. There's a book on the subject. You can find it on the net. And it's got all the history and implications and inferences in the book. It's the whole subject of the book.
Fascinating.
I don't recall the author's name.
All right. Ananias, I'm sorry I mispronounced your name. It's a fine name. Ananias, thank you so much for a great call.
Good night.
Good night. There you go, Charles.
I've never
Title of Nobility Act, which basically means there is no valid law been passed by the United States Congress since 1819. Where does that leave us?
I don't know. That's crazy. I'll have to look into that a little bit.
Yes, the Title of Nobility Act of 1810. I'm going to look into it myself. Don't we have great callers? All right, let's go east of the Rockies, and Andrew is in Albany, New York. Andrew, we're going to squeeze you in before the break. You're on. Welcome.
Mr. Robinson, you made a comment about global warming. I think there's a simple proof that carbon is not a threat, that I'd like to get your judgment on it. In the deserts the temperature crashes every night, and that proves that carbon, which is the only insulator in the deserts, is a non-insulating gas that we should not be regulating.
That's interesting.
Well, I don't think Charlie presents himself as a climatologist or a climate scientist, but that certainly is interesting.
That's interesting, though. I'm going to write that down. Yeah, great. I'm going to be up all night checking out all these things.
Well, you know what? This is not a debate about climate change or global warming, but what I find interesting is if you talk to farmers who own greenhouses and what they do to optimize plant growth, let's say they're growing tomatoes, they'll pump carbon dioxide into the greenhouse. Now, they don't just do it willy-nilly. They have a particular concentration in mind. And from what I understand, it's usually about 1,200 parts per million. 1,200 parts per million, I'm told, is optimal, an optimal concentration for plant growth. And that's why they pump in that concentration into a greenhouse. Now, presently, here on planet Earth, our atmosphere contains about 400 parts per million. To me, that sounds like we're on a bit of a carbon dioxide starvation diet. So I'll just throw that out there. Let's see. We might have time for one more. Let's work in Robert from, he's in Illinois. I'm going to mispronounce this name. Is it Oquaka?
Oquaka.
Oquaka. Yeah. Oquaka, Illinois. Where is that, Robert?
West Central Illinois, on the edge of the Mississippi.
Wonderful. Okay. Your question or comment for Charlie?
Okay, I'll go quick. Gosh, what an awesome show tonight.
Thank you for listening.
Everything your guest is saying, so I won't elaborate too much on that. And you have great callers, smart people.
Always.
Well, I've read a lot about climatology, so I'm totally on board with his view. I'll just be real quick, and this might be controversial. Barack Obama, when he was president, the epidemic of, what was that? The disease that was going around that was popular in the news.
Ebola?
Ebola, yes. And he was quoted as saying, Ebola was just a dry run. And I suppose that could be a mean thing for me to say, but was that a Freudian slip, or does that indicate that, like Stephen King's book, The Stand, where this virus got out and killed everybody? Am I just being mean or conspiratorial?
Well, we're going to leave that just sort of hanging there, if you don't mind. We'll take a time out. We'll come back. During the next break, which is a short one, I'll get Charlie to address that. Okay, Charlie? And you hang on as well, caller. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. Check out my new podcast, Conspiracy Unlimited. New episodes drop every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. One of our crack producers here at Coast to Coast AM is Donna Walker, and she looked into it, and here's what she found out. Ananias, a great call from Fort Myers, was talking about the Titles of Nobility Act, and Donna writes that the Titles of Nobility Amendment is a proposed amendment to the United States Constitution. The 11th Congress passed it on May the 1st, 1810, and submitted it to the state legislatures for ratification. It would strip United States citizenship from any citizen who accepted a title of nobility from an emperor, king, prince, or foreign power. On two occasions, between 1812 and 1816, it was within two states of the number needed to become part of the Constitution. Congress did not set a time limit for its ratification, so the amendment is still pending before the states. Ratification by an additional 26 states is now needed for its adoption. So it was proposed, this amendment, but never passed by the required number of states, which is part of how the Constitution is amended. Thank you for that, Donna. Now, this is a short segment, Charlie. I'm just going to get you to respond to a caller. Now, he's dropped off the line, but he was asking about the Ebola outbreak in Africa a couple of years ago in places like, I believe, Liberia. or perhaps it was the Ivory Coast, and the comment by President Obama at the time, something about Ebola, this outbreak being a dry run. Now, I think Obama was simply saying, you know, we got off lucky this time because it was contained fairly quickly. You know, maybe we won't be so lucky next time. Perhaps you see something more nefarious afoot. I don't know. You tell me.
Well, here's a quote from Dr. Eric Pianca. It says, "War and famine would not do. Instead, disease offered the most efficient and fastest way to kill the billions that must soon die if the population crisis is to be solved. AIDS is not an efficient killer because it's way too slow. My favorite candidate for eliminating 90% of the world's population is Ebola because it's both highly lethal and it kills in days instead of years. We've got We've got airborne diseases with 90% mortality in humans, killing humans. Think about that. You know, the bird flu is good too. For everyone who survives, he'll have to bury nine."
Right, but Ebola is not airborne, correct? I mean, it has to be. It's passed through the through bodily fluids, is it not?
Well, they describe this one as Ebola Restin, so I guess it's a version of it. It's airborne. So.
Yeah, the day that it becomes airborne, we're looking at big trouble. All right, we're going to take another time out here. That was a short segment. We'll head into the break, and on the other side, take more calls from Vince in New Orleans, Wayne in Chicago, Charles in Texas, Kay in Texas, Charlie Robinson, the author of The Octopus of Global Control. Back with more in a moment, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Charlie Robinson stays with us, The Octopus of Global Control. Here's another great quote from the book. And again, this book is just full of them, over 500 quotes. "We need a government that does not give in to a globalist agenda, an agenda I am now convinced seeks to bring American as a sovereign nation and the middle class to their knees." That was George Norrie, radio host Coast to Coast. There you go. It's true. I believe that is the great struggle that we are now facing. It is the proponents of globalism, and I'm not just talking about free trade. I'm talking about the elimination of the nation state as an entity. So we have the globalists on one side, and the proponents of the nation state on the other. And as I always say, for those people who love the idea of one world government, if you think your government in Washington is unresponsive, because, you know, you're the other side of the country, think how much far more unresponsive it's going to be if the world government is centered in, I don't know, The Hague or Bern, Switzerland or someplace like that.
They also want a world army. But if you think about that, if everyone is, you know, all in one piece, why would you need an army unless you were going to, there's no enemies unless you consider the public as your enemy.
There you go. Wayne is in Chicago. Wayne, good morning. Welcome to Coast AM.
Good morning. Great show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, let me start off by saying the Zika virus is patented by the Rockefeller Foundation. They hold the patent to that virus. The swine flu scare we had a few years ago, that was mainly for economic reasons. If you remember, the price of pork was like, bacon would be like $1.79 a pound. Now it's like $3, $4, $5 a pound. So they more than double the price of pork because of the swine flu scare. The Ebola virus, United States had biowarfare labs right in the heart of Africa where that Ebola started. Sierra Leone, Liberia, Guinea. The Center for Disease Control was working for the Pentagon on the Ebola virus. And what Obama said was true. That was a dry run. The Africans and the healthcare personnel workers were the guinea pigs of that. What I want to talk about was YouTube and this censorship that's going on. I go to certain YouTube channels that talk about things like the what's going on in Syria right now with the Russians, the Iranians, the United States. They will block your comments. They'll make sure you can't make a comment or read comments. So this censorship thing is really taking hold in the United States. I want to know what your guest thinks about that.
All right, Charlie. Censorship on YouTube and just in general on social media.
Yeah, it's legit. It's been ramped up over the last year. But there's a Voltaire quote that says, to find out who rules over you, simply find out who you're not allowed to criticize. So.
Well, this for my money, though, the social media right now seems to be, for example, on Twitter, and on YouTube, the groups that are targeted for censorship, for example, Dennis Prager, who is a conservative, he happens to be a talk show host that I admire, I like. Now, whether you agree or disagree, the point is he has a series of videos, pretty popular, called Prager University. And he gets speakers, both from the left and the right, to speak about different topics. I find them very educational. And for a while, PragerU was shut down on YouTube. Now, they had to fight to get it back. I think part of the problem is that some of these YouTubers, their numbers, I mean, they're huge. Paul Watson has a huge following. They have bigger numbers than some of the news networks like CNN. So they are a threat to the mainstream media. And I'm wondering if that might be behind it. You're kind of fading in and out there.
Sorry about that. It's short-sighted for a company like YouTube to start banning people or removing subscribers. You know, that's not going to work long-term. You're going to find a lot of people leaving to go somewhere else to get their videos. But
All right. Let's say hi next to Kay is in Houston, Texas. Hi, Kay. Welcome to Coast. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you, gentlemen. It's a great program, and thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Just a comment and then a question, if I may, and I'll take it off the air. Coast to Coast interviewed a Dr. Putoff, who's with a sort of a slow-release program about possible alien technology or extraterrestrial technology. He had mentioned, perhaps somewhat uncomfortably, that there was some material found, which raises a lot of questions. He also talked about a leaked document. He obviously didn't say which leaked document he may have been referring to, but that talked about these crashes. Could this possibly tie in to the tentacles of control that you're establishing in your book, a possible alien threat presence here on Earth? That
I think
that's a great question. That's a great question, Kay. In other words, how does the whole UFO disclosure agenda fit into, you know, this the scheme of the octopus? Is the octopus using UFO disclosure, or is it being challenged by UFO disclosure?
Well, I don't. The recent UFO disclosure strikes me as being like a limited hangout. You've got a bunch of guys that have, you know, they're ex-CIA, and they're saying, all right, I'm disgruntled, I'm going to leak some of this information. I don't know, but I don't think there's such a thing as ex-CIA, so it'd be very distrusting about these guys that are pushing for disclosure. I hope we get it. I just don't think we can count on those guys to do it. So.
Yeah, but there are some well-meaning, heroic figures in the CIA, in the FBI. Maybe this guy that's blowing the whistle is one of them. We can't discount that. I think, you know, that's where the cynicism comes in when we start to distrust everybody and everything. Yeah. And then pretty soon, what are we left with?
Right. Well, I hope he's legit. I hope this happens. I just, you know, like I said, I'm a bit cynical, so... It would be a great thing to have that, but my feeling is it'll probably be controlled. You know, the narrative will be controlled by the government and those people, and we'll never get the full story. Hopefully we will, but not as long as the government controls the information.
Earlier on, we were talking about the Georgia Guidestones, and Spike is trucking in Georgia right now. He says he just passed the Georgia Guidestones. Spike, are you there?
Yes. Good morning, gentlemen. Great show, by the way.
Thank you. Good morning, Spike.
I was listening to Coast, as I do every night, and I heard you guys talking about the Georgia Guidestones, and I'm going, gosh, I wish I could find out where they're at. And lo and behold, I'm driving down 77 to the supplier. I haul BMW parts, and I see this little green sign. It says GA Guidestones with an arrow to the left. So I look to my left immediately. In the middle of this vacant field, lit up, are the Guidestones. They look so out of place.
There you are, right there in Elbert County, Georgia.
Yep, correct. That's where the supplier is at, and I'm going, I cannot believe this is happening, because I just listened to you guys when I was going back to BMW to pick up another trailer about the GA Guidestones, and sure enough, there they are.
That's was the, crazy. And was there, had anyone stopped to look at them? I mean, is it a popular tourist attraction? Are people stopped and looking at them?
Yeah, well, no, nobody was there, because it was, right now it's 4:50 in the morning. I passed them earlier at about 1:15. And they're right off the highway. You can see them within eyesight, and there's a little pull-off that you go up to them, and I guess there's a parking lot at the top. But, I mean, now that I know where they're at, I'm going to go there when I have time off to see them up close and personal and see what they say on them.
That is crazy. The universe is
weird. They're in the middle of nowhere. They're just out in the middle of nowhere. You would never seem to look there, you know?
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, another thing is they're really expensive. Apparently, it's a well-done monument. So,
granite. Anyone who's had to, purchase a headstone would know the price of granite. And these things are huge. And there are, how many of them? 10 of them? 8 of them? Yeah, there's 10 of them. 10 huge slabs of granite. It would seem to me it would be fairly easy to track down who this was. My understanding, someone actually approached, as I said, it's in Elberton County. They went to the granite company there, and this individual, mysterious individual, was supposedly representing a small group of loyal Americans, and they commissioned the structure. I would think someone, could do a little bit of digging and find out, who this person was.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow. Well, the rumor is that it's Ted Turner, but I can't prove that, but I would be really interested to know who is who made the decision to start that, to finance it and put it out there for the public. It's
all right, Spike, thank you for that.
How far, I just have a question for the caller, how far away is it from civilization? Is it near, or is it an hour out of town, or what?
It's in the middle of a large vacant stretch of highway. There's no houses. It was just out of the blue. I saw this little green sign, and I thought, oh my God. I looked to the left immediately, and there they are in this field, all lit up. It's surreal looking. It's just really odd, and I got to really feel, I'm getting ready to pass them here again in about 20 minutes, and if I've got room to pull off, I'm going to go look at them. The curiosity is killing me.
All right, there you go. Check it out. Yeah, the 10 guidelines or principles. Number one, maintain humanity under 500,000 in perpetual balance with nature. Two, guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity. Three, unite humanity with a living new language. What does that mean? It sounds like the Tower of Babel. Four, rule passion, faith, tradition, and all things with tempered reason. Five, protect people and nations with fair laws and just courts. Well, nothing on the surface really sounds that odious. I mean,
right.
The question is, how do they get to that 500,000? That's the big
exactly.
question.
Yeah, and I think that's number one on the list, if I'm not
Yes, it is. Number six, let all nations rule internally, resolving external disputes in a world court. Not a big fan of the world court, but the idea that they would say let all nations rule internally, at least they're paying some lip service to the idea of a nation state.
Right.
Avoid petty laws and useless officials. Well, I think we can all get behind that. So I don't know, on the surface, some of these sound fairly reasonable. Others, you know, question mark, particularly the 500,000. Who's going to decide how we get to that point?
It's probably not going to be you and me. And that's a bit, well, maybe you'll get rid of all the people that are, you know, questioning the truth and troublemakers like me. Get rid of us. That'll take care of a bunch.
We're on the short list, my friend. A quick call from Vince in New Orleans. Vince has been waiting a while. I appreciate the patience, Vince. Quick question or comment, if you would.
Good morning, Richard. It's a great show. Worth staying up for.
Appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
I would like to propose, once again, a little common sense in our government. For instance, do away with 90% of the IRS and put 10% tax on every cash register in the United States. We'd be out of the hole in 6 months. But that's too easy. Another thing, quickly, is the war on drugs. Well, the war on drugs is a war on our medicine that we need for quality of life issues. These idiots are misusing it, and now we can't get it, and we're living in pain. They won't let a dog live in pain.
Vince, I'm going to let that be the last comment, and I thank you for it. Thanks for holding on. Thanks for contributing. Charlie Robinson, it's been a delight. Thank you for hanging out for the last 3 hours. How can we get a copy of The Octopus of Global Control?
You can get a copy at Amazon. There's paperback and also a Kindle version. And you can also check out my Facebook page. It's Facebook and The Octopus of Global Control. A lot of funny videos and pictures and things like that. So if you like the book, I mean, if you have someone in your life that isn't getting, you know, these topics and you want to sort of help them to get it, just send them the book, because I tackle a number of different issues and you never know which one is going to be the trigger point for someone to go.
And as you say, the best thing to do is do it with a smile, because some of the quotes are quite humorous. Again, thank you, Charlie, so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate that.
All right. Bye-bye. For George Norrie, George Napoli Saline, Stephanie Smith, Tom Denheiser, Dan Galante, Chris Burrows, Sean Latisore, Nathan Staten, Donna Walker, and here in Toronto, Mike Van Dixon, Robert Turner, and Patrick O'Neill, I'm Richard Serrett. Thank you for your ears and your voices, your beautiful voices. This is Coast to Coast AM. So long for now.